So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Whoa! Every time I hear that, I hear a new title,
I need
to say congratulations, Sherlyn. Congratulations once again.
Thanks again.
We are back for the new year, everybody, and we're going to be talking about CES 2022, an event that is sort of going on physically in zombie mode because people are there, but we are covering it remotely, and we've got so many things to talk about. So let's stay tuned for that. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget Podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcaster of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's genuinely helpful. Everybody looks at that. That is a big deal. So please do that. And you can drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We typically record live Thursdays on the Engadget YouTube channel around 10 a.m. Eastern. So join us for that, too. It's always a fun chat. So, Sherlyn, CES for me, I cover a lot of chips. Mm-hmm. And it's always like the big chip thing, right? Like yes. Intel, AMD, everybody has to announce their new chips so they can be in the new PCs. So we talk about them throughout the rest of the year. There's so much stuff this year. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, before I dive into the nitty gritty of things, like, were there things from your perspective that you were looking forward to at CES or from the PC side of things?
I wanted to see cool, weird stuff. And I think I saw a bunch of it this year. We already, discussed some of that earlier in earlier episodes. But I also am grateful we didn't end up going physically to the show.
Uh-huh.
And... You know, unlike last year where it felt like it was a very crazy CES and, you know, that was all virtual, this year it felt like we were all just trying to make the best of a bad situation. And so it feels a little less stressful in that sense. Does it feel that way to you too?
I mean, it was just, I think maybe there's more of a workload of things because last year everybody was still, like, trying to get their bearings of how to do CES remotely. And now a lot of companies are just like, okay, fine, virtual conferences, but also we're still going to have a pile of news. So I've basically been working nonstop since like Saturday morning on everything and, you know, throughout last week too. So there was a ton of work. You could see it all on Engadget.com. And, you know, we're just now I'm like taking a step back and trying to think about everything and think about the broader implications of things. So that's really it. CES is always a huge workload for us.
Always.
So I have to remind myself to like think about what all this means, too, because when you're in the trenches, it's easy to like just feel overwhelmed with everything. So what does this mean? And I think for the PC industry, it's going to mean a lot of new things because we've seen a couple foldable PCs, like foldable OLED, big 17-inch OLED PCs. There's a lot of new interesting hardware. I'm just going to go down like some of the key stuff. Intel showed off their 12th gen hybrid CPUs for notebooks. And we talked about this in October. Their 12th gen chips have P cores, performance cores, and E cores, efficient cores, and they kind of combine them together to give you like good multi-threading capabilities, right? So the P cores can do hard work when you're rendering something or playing a game, and the E cores can do stuff in the background. So if you're like streaming a game, that can handle the like, okay, I'm going to be spitting stuff up to OBS or through YouTube or wherever. So it's that combination of power that's really interesting. So those chips are headed to notebooks, as we expected. They're going to have up to 14 cores, topping out at 6 P cores, 8 E cores. This is all very confusing, I know.
Wow.
You could think, it's a lot of cores. And it's interesting because AMD has been pushing, like, what, 8 cores in their mobile CPUs for a while. And that's, like, 8 straight-up, like, fast cores. So this is, like, a new strategy for Intel. I think it'll be really interesting to see how this all works out. We know the P cores are going to be super fast. They say the E cores are about as fast as like 10th gen Intel CPUs. So like chips from a couple years ago, this is entirely new process for Intel. And they say like you can expect some good performance gains. So, you know, we'll see. Intel claims 12th gen is up to 40% faster than its 11th gen chips. The top end like 12900HK is going to be up to 28% faster in gaming. This will be really interesting because also the U series chips that Intel has for ultra portables and stuff, those are going to top out at 2 P cores and 8 efficient cores. So they're technically going to be 10 core chips, but you know, they're leaning more on the efficiency side. Is that going to hurt their overall power? Do we care for ultra portables? Yeah. What do you think when you hear that, Shilin?
Does not compute. Does not compute to me. I feel like you shouldn't shaft the ultra portables, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, we don't know. Is it shafting? And also, Intel's ultra portable chips have always been kind of shafted, right? Like, if you remember the Y series chips, if you remember the like really, really low voltage things, we've reviewed some of those, and those computers are always like kind of disappointing. Right. This year, they also have a P series of chips that are also really interesting, which are like higher wattage than the U series. It's going to be fascinating too, because those P series chips are going to be in things like, I believe, like the new XPS 13 Plus, which we'll talk more about in a bit. But right now, I'm just like trying to wrap my head all around like what these new chips mean for Intel laptops. They are going to have up to 96 graphics cores or graphics execution units. So it'll also be interesting to see like how Intel's, you know, their Xe graphics get better. They've talked about their Arc graphics, which are going to be their dedicated graphics chips. It's going to be a really interesting year for Intel laptops in general. So, you know, we're going to wait and see. And meanwhile, on the other side, AMD announced their new Ryzen 6000 mobile CPUs, which, you know, look like solid follow-ups to last year's. But what's really interesting is that they have RDNA 2 graphics. And AMD says that means you'll be able to play like AAA games, you know, new games that take a lot of power over 60 FPS with just your CPU graphics. So there is like a big graphics war happening in notebooks, and typically, like, I would bet on AMD, just because AMD has been integrating these graphics chips into consoles, into other systems, like into their CPUs for a while now. These are the fastest graphics chips they've ever done on a CPU. So again, fast stuff to expect here. Both Intel and AMD's new chips are going to support DDR5 RAM, which are higher bandwidth chips, more efficient RAM chips too for LPDDR. There's a lot of cool stuff to look forward to from all these things. Like, between Intel and AMD, Sherlyn, like, is there anything in particular that's exciting you at this point?
I mean, I'm intrigued. I'd have to test them out and see performance. For myself. But something that Dude Named Charlie, one of our live stream chat participants, is saying is that it sounds like Apple's new chips have stirred the pot for these chip manufacturers and that they
it could be these things have had to be in the work for a while. So I think there was more like there was an industry trend towards trying to do this stuff. But I'm sure Intel and AMD have heard a lot from their like back channels that, hey guys, Apple is up to something. And if you if you don't step it up, like, you're going to be left behind. Like, the whole reason Apple went to its own chips away from Intel is because it seemed like they were not happy with the slow progress for Intel hardware, and Apple thought they could do more themselves. So
yes,
hey, competition. It's a good thing. Yes. We talked about this when Apple introduced it. Like, I want all these companies to try new things. We don't want anybody to feel like too dominant and like have innovation stagnate. So good things for everybody, basically, no matter which platform you choose. NVIDIA is also usually a pretty big presence at CES, and they showed off a couple things. It didn't feel as like big and dramatic as it usually is for them, but they revealed that the 3090 Ti on the desktop graphics side is coming. So that's going to be their highest end chip. It sounds super powerful, 24 gigabytes of GDDR6X memory. Tremendous power. And I don't know if people are going to be able to find this. We don't know what the final cost is going to be for this thing. They have not announced the pricing of the 3090 Ti or Tie. But remember, the 3090 started at $1,500 and then add on the like all the extra stuff that happens from the GPU market, like prices rising, little stock, scalpers taking a lot of stock too. There's a lot of stuff going on there. NVIDIA also announced the RTX 3070 Ti and 3080 Ti GPUs are coming to laptops. And also something really interesting, they're leaning on 27-inch 1440p gaming monitors that can go up to 360 hertz. So that is a high refresh rate for 1440p. NVIDIA is saying, like, you know, typically gamers, especially esports players, lean on 1080p because you can get much higher frame rates. at a, you know, at a pretty decent resolution. And now NVIDIA is basically saying our graphics cards are so good, guys, that you can get over 300 FPS in 1440p, get a little better resolution, maybe get some help aiming or something. These new monitors are also interesting too, because they can run in like a 1080p mode and they'll like scale down to 25 inches, but still like look accurate apparently. So that could be cool. There's a lot of good stuff happening there. Nothing like earth shattering from NVIDIA, but you know, cool nonetheless. I think the overall thing I'm getting from, you know, all these announcements is that laptops are going to look really interesting this year. Is there like, has there been anything super compelling to you, Sherlyn, from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, like the laptop land at CES 2022 is kind of wild. Let's start with you talked about when you're discussing AMD, like you talked about how you would bet on AMD, right? So Lenovo actually took a huge bet on AMD at CES 2022, announcing a new line of ThinkPads called the ThinkPad Z series, currently including just the ThinkPad Z13 and the Z16. This is an AMD-only line of ThinkPads with a sustainability focus. I start with this because it's one of my... like, it's one of those things that crept up on me and I was, like, surprised by it. We're not talking about the ThinkBook... we're not talking yet about the ThinkBook Plus Gen 3, which we will get to in a little bit. The Z series is actually just a thin and light, like an ultra portable. It's Lenovo's attempt to reach more of that Dell XPS audience that wants something that's not your conventional ThinkPad, that I think people have an idea of, that very state looking, very business minded, ultra portable. The ThinkPad Z series has very thin and light design. I touched one of these in person, and it has sort of a, you know, the lid has a sort of cutout around the communications bar, which is where the camera and microphone are housed. And it makes it easier to kind of just open the laptop with one hand, because this bar, the cutout, kind of peeks out over on top of the bottom deck a little bit more. So it actually gives you this little handle to push the laptop up a little bit. You can check out the pictures on Engadget.com. We have a few articles about Lenovo's announcements. But this as a mainstream product was interesting to me. Also, you know, with Lenovo, weirdly enough, betting on AMD. Lenovo did do something else that was very interesting, and I feel like a lot of people are intrigued by this. It's called the ThinkBook Plus Gen 3. If you followed Lenovo's work in the past, you'll know Lenovo tends to kind of experiment on its ThinkBook line of small, medium business-focused laptops. The Gen 3 model is an ultra-wide 17-inch laptop. Running at, this is the main screen runs at 21:10 aspect ratio. That's why it's ultra wide. But then it has a second screen next to the keyboard. This is an 8-inch LCD with a digitizer layer on it. It's to the right of the keyboard. So right off the bat, this is not designed for left-handed users. And I need to ask Lenovo if they have plans to make, you know, a different version.
No, I don't think they will.
It's too difficult, but
it's a,
you know,
it's a shame. Like when we first started talking about this, Sherlyn, I was like, oh, I see exactly what Lenovo did here, because if you guys have been following Lenovo for the past decade, they've tried time and again to get Android tablets like off the ground. So like, hey, what's this? An 8-inch screen that they just shoved into a laptop for some reason? I think Lenovo probably had like good stock, or at least like a good line
leftover
of
tablets,
like, leftover junky screens. Tablet screens, because this is like a low res screen too, right? It's like 12. It's like
1280 by 800, but vertically, so yeah. 800 by 1280. Yeah,
that's basically an 8-inch Android tablet, you know. So it seems like they combined these. Like, from your perspective, like, did it actually work well, like within Windows, or is it just like a weird little gimmick?
So the really cool thing about it is, and to right off the bat, let's be clear, this isn't the first time we've seen dual screen PCs. We've seen Asus try. You know, we know that Apple's got the Touch Bar. This is sort of somewhere in between. It's not above the keyboard; it's to the right, and there's the digitizer layer on top of it makes it very responsive for, you know, doodling, scribbling. I actually had a good experience writing on this as a sort of notepad.
So it's not just a touchscreen; it is a special layer for the styluses too, right? So
it's also that, but It's also that, but it's also, right, Windows 11 also reads this as an external monitor. So you can actually extend your content onto it. You can mirror if you want. With some apps like Adobe Lightroom, you can have a magnified view of what you're working on down there next to the keyboard. You know, I think designers and artists and illustrators are going to find that kind of convenient. It also, Windows 11, you know how Windows 11 has these like, snap shortcuts for you to like conveniently snap things into like two halves of the screen or like that sort of thing. The ThinkBook Plus Gen 3 has a few more orientations. So it allows for you to quickly throw an app to, let's say, the bottom half of the second screen or the top left two thirds of the big screen. But there's also this new mode called Waterfall. And if I told you Waterfall, what would you think it was, Devendra?
Maybe the window contents like go down into this other screen.
So it's like one window taking the left the right side of the screen, and then it overflows into that. So it's handy if you have like a super long list that you don't want to keep scrolling down. It's like a nice thing to look at. I'm not sure of the practical daily use of that format.
I wish you'd put that, like, if you look at these shots we're looking on the live stream here of this computer next to Sherlyn. It is an ultra wide, right? So it is like, it's not just a 17-inch tablet. Right. It is an extra, extra wide display. So I can't imagine this thing actually like fitting into book bags, like certain book bags and stuff too. Like, it is a weird, weird size.
And you
mentioned designers. Like, yeah, do designers trust Lenovo at this point? Do we trust Lenovo and their hardware quality? There's a lot of questions here.
Yeah, there's so to be very clear, when I say that I like the Z series and I like the idea of the ThinkBook Plus, let's caveat all of this by saying, one, the ThinkBook Plus was, you know, not very stable at our hands-on. It's still running very early software, so there's a lot of things that Lenovo has to iron out before even making this available for sale in May for $1,399, so $1,400. And then also, Lenovo doesn't have the best track record when it comes to quality over the years. So we
it's gotten
need
worse.
To... I've heard so many reports. So we need to, like, you know, keep a close eye and be very cautious about, we're not recommending anyone buy any of these at the moment. Of course, we're just saying this is an interesting concept, interesting looking products that, you know, we saw at CES. And I know that there was a lot of interest in the ThinkBook Plus Gen 3 after our hands-on went up. So I'm here to answer any of your questions. Send them my way.
So there's one question I see that's from the chat. Is the tablet, like, is it running Android at all? Or is it just a secondary display with special software?
That latter is correct. It's basically secondary. So it's Windows. It's Windows seeing it as a second screen. And there's also Lenovo customized software on top of it to make it quickly be like a numpad if you want. Or like that digital notepad for you to scratch notes on.
So like what Asus did with the screen pad stuff on their thing. I don't know about this. I feel like we're gonna have to get our hands on this one to test because it took Asus basically 2 years to make the screen pad like a really good thing, and that is a big screen that is right below your monitor and right above the keyboard. And it's weird and awkward, but at least it didn't like shove my keyboard all the way to the side. So
I'll also say that Lenovo hasn't given a battery estimate. This thing uses a 69 watt hour battery, and I don't know that that's enough for the two screens. And
so big.
Good luck, bro. Good luck, because this is good like luck, two devices bro. At once. So
well, how
it's
about
interesting.
Let's take that feeling of good luck, bro. That is how I felt when I was looking at the Asus ROG Flow Z13, another Z tablet, but. You know, last year, Asus showed off the ROG Flow X13. That was like a 2-in-1 ultra portable. The screen would like flip all the way around. You could use it at like a 360 degree convertible, basically, with like very, very minimal hardware here. This one is essentially a slightly thicker Surface Pro because it is a Windows tablet. It has a kickstand in the back. Certainly heavier than the Surface Pro. I believe it's like 2.43 pounds. But it has NVIDIA's RTX 3050 Ti graphics too, which is much, much faster than what was in last year's X13. I have it here because Asus kindly like sent us one to preview so we could actually get hands-on time with it. That's useful. I haven't been able to run games. I couldn't run benchmarks because they say the drivers just aren't ready for it. But in terms of like the feel of it, it is, I don't know, it is very big. Like, it's a very big tablet. Thankfully, they include the keyboard accessory. and it attaches on the bottom just like a Surface. So that's a good thing. But man, this thing is so it's so top heavy. Like, you certainly can't use it in a lap. That's something I can occasionally do with a Surface. Like, a Surface is like, the tablet alone is like 1.5 pounds. So I can, like, balance a Surface screen on my lap with the kickstand and, like, do some typing. Like, I've done it a lot when I've been reviewing those things. This thing, I can't even sit still and have in my lap. So that's out. It's really meant to be like an ultra portable gaming option. And, you know, I don't know who it's for, really. Like, that's my thing, especially since we've seen so many really good and capable 14-inch gaming laptops and even some 13-inches. Like, I think a lot of people would be better off with one of those because you get faster graphics. You wouldn't have all these compromises. I don't know what the battery life is going to be on this thing because it's trying to be a tablet. And it's also so big as a tablet. Like, I would never sit and hold this thing and browse the internet or something. So, you know, good effort, Asus. I think they built this just to see if they could do it. I don't know who would actually buy this thing. I don't think it's a wise decision, but we're going to be reviewing it eventually, like with the final model, and I guess we'll see. Would you be intrigued by something like this, Shrillin? Like a too big Surface, basically?
I'm mostly concerned about like latency for controllers, right? Like when you have a gaming device like that, the connected keyboard should be fine. But like, are you going to use, I don't know, Bluetooth mice?
I mean, you can use wired stuff. It has ports. Like you could set it up along with like an external keyboard and your gaming mouse and stuff. But at that point, then just
might as well go for it. Yeah, exactly. That's my thing. It's like the whole thing about a tablet is portability, but then with a gaming device, it's like, well, you still got to carry this and you're that and your control. I don't know. We'll see. I'm skeptical.
There are so many things. And actually, like as we, I want to like shift our discussion around this because Intel also announced something that was really interesting. Their third generation Intel Evo specification. Evo, this is confusing, right? Remember, it was originally called Project Athena. Then they renamed it to Intel Evo. So that's a technically second gen. This is the third attempt at like doing that. And it's a whole new specs. What's really interesting is that, yeah, it supports 12th-gen chips. It supports H-series chips for the first time, which means faster processors and things that could be in gaming computers can be in the Evo spec. Typically, you know, before they were like really aiming at ultra-portables, right? Like, what's the best you can do with a thin and light computer? Now they're aiming a little higher in performance. They also added a spec for foldables. And we're seeing some foldables this year. I haven't heard back from Asus. Like, Asus showed off a 17-inch foldable OLED. I'll talk more about that in a bit. But I don't know if that's Evo spec at this point. Nobody's confirming it. But the fact that Intel's thinking about this, the fact that, you know, they're working with PC makers to build foldable devices, I think is pretty interesting. You know, I talked to somebody from Intel, basically the head of their like mobile innovation, and they say a lot of PC makers are just using Intel's foldable prototype, and we've seen like glimpses of that at Computex like over the past couple of years. So some of that hardware is going straight into some of these notebooks. Kind of interesting that Intel is taking like a strong role here. Also, like, I was really interested in like the keyboard side of things too. So Intel says part of the Evo spec, PC makers have to actually build a keyboard accessory for these devices. They can't force them to include like the keyboard in the box, but they're going to like strongly recommend it because they're freaking Intel. So there's some really cool stuff happening there. Have you heard about this phone integration technology, Sherlyn? Like, I think we've talked about this a little. Intel last year bought a company called Screenovate. And they're really interesting because they have developed basically the only technology that lets you mirror stuff on your iPhone, so like your text messages and stuff, and get data from your iPhone and bring it to Windows PC.
PCs, okay.
Two PCs. Like Dell used it for their Mobile Connect technology, basically like starting a couple years ago. So this tech has already been on systems, but now Intel owns it. And Intel also tells me like they're going to start working on this like getting it into Evo machines by this holiday season. So the end of the year, Evo computers will have some sort of like capability to connect your iPhone, connect your Android devices too. Android tablets could be used as secondary displays, much like how Sidecar works on macOS and iPads. So there's like some interesting stuff happening here. Eventually, Intel says they want to try to bring this to more PCs, but they're kind of starting with Evos. Do you, like, would that solve a big problem for you? Because you're a Windows user, and now you're more of an iPhone user, and I think you're learning that there are limitations because of that, right?
I hate my life, right? Ever since I've adopted an iPhone as one of my main devices, although I am, again, contemplating switching over to the Pixel 6 Pro. I'm just switching back and forth.
I mean, you could just juggle, whatever.
I am juggling both. No, it is intriguing to see this attempt at cross-platform integration of phone and laptop. I know the Android side of things has been easier for a while. Every computer OEM has more or less made their own version, like Samsung with the Flow stuff, and Dell's Mobile Connect has always worked with Android. And there's, you know, phone to Windows on Android as well. I love to see it. And I think it's interesting to make it a spec, like make it part of a spec to basically demand that it works. Might it draw away iPhone users from the Mac ecosystem? I don't think so, but it would make life easier for those who are on iPhone and Windows. I think there's a small section of us. There's a lot of us.
That's me. I use Macs too, but also I prefer using iPhones. I prefer iPads over Android stuff. And on my home system, I prefer Windows.
Right.
So there should be more interoperability here. And I think Intel is just kind of trying to lead towards that. So let's talk about the Asus 17-inch foldable OLED. The ZenBook 17 Fold, which I think could be one of these Evo machines. Nobody's confirming yet.
Okay.
But it is. What's funny is that when Asus first showed this off to me, they're like, hey, look at this 12-inch ZenBook we made. It's so cute, right? It's such a cute thing. Then they took the keyboard off, and voila, it was a 17-inch tablet kind of folded. So they tried to have their little flair with this,
it's
too.
Cute.
It's cute. It is a 17-inch OLED tablet. You can fold it like a book to close it completely. You can have, like, you can use it with like a virtual keyboard and just have the screen kind of popping up. They also have a wireless keyboard accessory. Thank God. That sits like right on the bottom half of the screen. So if you want to use it like an ultra portable, if you want to use it like on a plane or something and do some typing, you could do that too. But it can also be a big 17-inch foldable. It could be like a big magazine thing that you bend into. Very interesting. I think it looks cool. I have not touched this, but it seems cool. Yeah,
we've seen Lenovo attempt something similar with the ThinkPad X1 Fold. Let's remind people. That one was, the original version of that was chunky. It felt like there were parts of it that seemed like duct tape material was used.
This looks sleeker. This looks a lot better than the X1
in the Fold. Pictures. Yeah. We'll have to see again, like you said, in person. I also want to.
I have seen people using the prototypes. I've seen them bend it. I've seen them open because I did like a video chat with Asus. Right. So it works. It exists. They couldn't send stuff for us to preview, but I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. It sounds like they're going to be talking more in Computex, like whenever Computex happens. So
they're selling this thing? They plan to sell this thing?
This is not a concept. This is a thing that they plan to sell. It has a 17.3-inch display. It's a 4:3 aspect ratio, Quad HD, slightly higher than Quad HD, 2560 by 1920, 90 hertz refresh rate, so it should look pretty smooth too. And
how much?
It's OLED. I don't think, they're not really talking that yet.
Okay.
But yeah, they plan to tell us more around Computex in May. I don't think we'll be flying to Taiwan for Computex, unfortunately, like at this rate, but hopefully we'll hear more. I'm just excited by this because it looks so much nicer than the X1 Fold. I trust Asus more.
I was going to say, when it comes to build quality, Asus
when it comes to build quality and more like innovative hardware, like I'm sorry, Lenovo, like you're just not. You are a big step down from the old IBM, and I think we've all noticed that. But yeah, any other thoughts on this foldable? Like, would you buy a foldable like this? Because I know you're more into foldable phones at this point.
I wouldn't buy a foldable yet. I will wait till they're
new.
All.
Don't buy anything.
No, I'll wait. Yeah, exactly. I won't buy anything first gen or even second gen in this space. I will wait till they're like Black Mirror-esque in their form and finished before I consider dropping money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before we get there. And let's talk about the most interesting notebook I saw at CES this year. And that is the XPS 13
Your
Plus.
Favorite series. Every time we say the words Dell XPS, Devendra is like.
We love the XPS 13.
Give me all.
Give me more. Sherlyn and I went to a preview with Dell ahead of CES in New York. So, like, thankfully I made it there before, like, this big wave of Omicron and everything. But we got to see this computer in person, and it looks beautiful. Like, it just looks really, really nice. It has what Dell calls a lattice-free keyboard. So there's, like, none of the, like, stuff in between the keys. It is just, like, all keyboard, edge to edge, nice.
It's not island
keycaps.
Style, yeah.
Not island style, right. It is just, like, big, beautiful keys, too. Like, they made the keys larger. The trackpad is integrated into the wrist rest, so the entire, like, wrist rest section is glass, in the way a typical glass trackpad is. But it's, like, not demarcated. It's just, like, there in the middle, and you can start using it. I think that could be a usability issue, but we'll talk more about that. It is a little thicker and heavier than the normal XPS 13, and that's still sticking around. This thing is going to weigh like 3.8 pounds, I believe they said. It's also going to have like 28-watt Intel CPUs, so faster, more powerful CPUs than the 15-watt-ish versions that were in the XPS 13 so far. Basically, this looks like if Dell just like went back to the drawing board and was like, give me a sleek, modern, ultra-portable, what would it look like? It would probably look like this, because this thing has the Infinity Edge screen. It just looks so clean and beautiful and minimalist. Like, I needed to touch it as soon as we saw these things. How did it strike you at the first time, Shirley?
When I saw this, I was happy to see the design. I think I even straight up said to the Dell executives there that I was like, oh, okay, if there is one thing I've been complaining about the XPS line is that your design has kind of become very expected.
It hasn't changed much.
But this represents sort of a departure from that. To me, bland design by now. But no, this is new and this is nice and I love the design. I'm a little hesitant about the keyboard. I like my island style keys.
I think you'll be fine with the keyboard because we did some testing.
We did test. It was fine to type on. I was a little cautious, but I was like, oh, okay, I can type on this.
There are some usability issues here. The keyboard is like, bigger keys are good. I don't think we'll miss the islands, but what we may miss is having like a clear demarcation on the trackpad of like where that sucker is. Cause even when we were like testing it, I was like, there were points where like, okay, am I left clicking? Am I right clicking? It's also a haptic trackpad. So it's not even physically moving. It's like a bump under the key that is happening there. It's sometimes hard to tell the difference between left and right clicks, which could be really annoying in Windows. So to me, that's a potentially big issue. And then there's the biggest issue of all.
This thing has
no headphone jack. No headphone jack. Why?
How dare they?
This thing is bigger than the XPS 13, which has a headphone jack.
Yeah.
And Dell was just like, nah, bro. No thanks.
It's the plus. It's for the people who want this beefier, high-performance machine. And they probably expect that these people have wireless headsets, I guess.
Sure. I mean, if you want to beefier, I also expect, like, and I brought this up with Dell. And this is one of the nice privileges I think we have is, like, I could sit there face-to-face with the designer and be like, why? Why did you do this?
Yeah.
And Dell was just like, they're like, hey, look at what's happening with phones. You know, phones are losing headphone jacks. And I'm like, I almost started shouting at them. It was like, that's completely different. You walk around with your phone. You know, you're out and about in the world. You're not like tied to a desk. I think a lot of people, especially PC users, you probably have like a wired headphone just sitting around by your desk. You know, you're not moving with the computer. You don't need the freedom of movement and everything. And sure, you could use wireless headphones with Windows. They don't connect as easily as they do with phones. Like Windows Bluetooth stuff is just really annoying. Changing audio devices is not great. And also swapping, like try having a Bluetooth headset connected to your PC and then hop it over to your phone. It is a nightmare. Like it's a nightmare to juggle that connection too. So as opposed to just like plug in a port, just plug it in. I don't know. I'm very frustrated by this because it's like Dell gave us the best looking ultra portable I've ever seen, the ultra portable of my dreams. And then it's like that Twilight Zone episode where it's like you get everything you want and not like the thing you really need. No headphone jack. Also, no other ports. It has two USB-C ports, no micro SD card slot, like nothing else. They're going for clean minimalism. Are you guys as angry about this as I am? Because I was also looking at other coverage of this thing and some people didn't even mention that it doesn't have a headphone jack. And I felt like I was going crazy because I thought at the very least, we can expect our laptops to have headphone jacks for a while. They're so useful. They're so useful. How do you feel, Sherlyn?
A few things that I will bring up from the live stream chat right now, which is someone mentioned that latency on wireless headphones is also an issue. So for
it's
this,
an issue.
You know,
yeah, Windows and Bluetooth is not like simple. It is not as stable as it is on phones. Yes. Like that's a fact. Yeah.
Sandeep McCall says that they still hate that mobile phones don't have headphone jacks. Yes. Don't forget. Don't just point to mobile phones as like an example. Remember that people didn't like that decision. And then finally, there was Hanbei, I believe, that said no function key available is also bad. Now, one thing I do want to point out in response to that, there is an up top. There is a row of function keys, but they're all touch.
They're capacitive touch keys. I don't miss those because I do touch typing. Like I do a lot of touch typing, but I don't like touch function keys because they're always in such weird spots. And you got to look down. You got to look down at your function keys. I think for people who may touch type with function keys, that could be a problem. I also think like Dell's really going for simplicity and beauty here. So losing a whole row of keys and just making that a capacitive row that can switch between F keys and also like shortcut keys for like media and stuff. Like you hit a button and like they change. It looks really nice, and it looked like, to me, that is the least of the like big usability concerns here. The big concerns are goddamn headphone jack and that trackpad. I think people are going to be really annoyed at using that trackpad too. And I look at this and I look at like decisions Apple has made in terms of its new laptops and stuff too. And I'm sure Johnny Ive and his like his crew were like, let's kill that headphone jack. Let's just do it like we're doing with everything else. And I think even the like super small 12-inch MacBook, that still had a headphone jack, right?
I believe so.
Really, really small one. So if Apple can make that work on such a tiny MacBook, I don't understand why Dell can't do it here. They said it was for heating reasons. They said like the way they designed the motherboard basically didn't leave room for a headphone module. I don't know. I can't accept the fact that they didn't have room for it on a machine that is nearly 4 pounds. Or I got to like look up this weight again. But
you said 3.8, yeah.
Is it 3.8 or is it 2.8? Sorry. I'm going to look this back up. But yeah,
I get that this is a different design and Dell is trying something different. I applaud that. But yeah, no, this is a controversial decision that seemed like a lot of other publications might have missed. Mm-hmm. I think it is
2.7 pounds, by the way. This is 2.7 pounds.
So it's close to three. Okay.
The XPS 13 is like 2.6. So it's a little heavier than that. Yeah.
It's a difficult thing to justify. We'll have to get one in and test out, I think, to see all the usability issues. Yeah.
But you review phones, Sherlyn, and you know, like, okay, I can buy the fact that you cannot fit a headphone module in because you've got such little space in a phone, right? You need space for batteries, you need space for bigger cameras and stuff. Whereas on an ultra portable, you're like, you've got so much space. Just use it more wisely. Do something. I even begged them, like, okay, are you going to include a USB-C to headphone jack converter? And they like kind of shrugged. So I know there's a lot of frustrating things happening with this machine.
No bueno.
One thing.
I can, you know, tell you right now that might seem like good news to you. When you were talking about how it is difficult to pair Bluetooth headsets to Windows, right? There might be something on the way that could help that. Google had a bunch of news this CES, and it's all about making Android work easier with non-Apple devices. So basically, Google's news at CES was around updates to its existing FastPair and Nearby Share technologies. But if you take the whole set of news, more than a dozen updates that Google announced at CES 2022, it seems like Google just wants to make the non-Apple world as sort of seamless and easy to interact between devices as it is for Apple users. So think of things like AirPlay, AirDrop, Air transfer? No, that's
AirDrop. Should have been doing this for years.
Yes.
I don't.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good to hear it's happening. Yeah.
So well, it's happening with, to me, some caveats, right? A lot of this news is happening over the next few weeks, months, and later this year. So one of the things it's doing is, yes, so FastPair is coming to things like TV. So eventually your Pixel Buds or supported FastPair devices, doesn't just have to be Google first devices, right? Can eventually show up when your TV detects it's in the area. In a similar way that the Apple TV now can recognize your Apple Watches in the area and let you do things like Fitness Plus plus functions. And then between the most intriguing thing to me is that FastPair is going to come to Windows PCs soon to make it easier to connect your Android phone to Windows PCs. And then through that connection, set up your connected Bluetooth headphones or your Wi-Fi passwords, port over what's already connected to your phone to your PC more easily.
That's just going to throw over the profiles, right? It's not going to let you like have a Bluetooth headphone and be able to use it from your phone and PC at the same time.
Well, there is also an update coming about audio switching, which is where, you know how Apple users, if they have AirPods connected to their iPad and their phone and their Mac, they can switch very easily. Google says a similar situation is going to a similar update is going to come where if you have a compatible headset paired to an Android tablet and a phone, and you're watching a movie on the tablet and then a call comes on your phone, the system will be smart enough to pause your movie on the tablet, automatically switch the audio over to your call so you can hear the ringing and you can answer. And then when you hang up, it can go right back. So that's what they're saying is
that's coming. What they're saying. I feel like when we hear the stuff from these tech companies, it's like you're at the horse races, right? And you're like, okay, who are you going to bet on? Who are you going to bet on to actually deliver this Google? And I'm like, I don't know.
Look, I get the skepticism, right? Google also has, you know, issues with its own track record of rolling out new features without bugs, but it is ultimately coming. Like, I feel like if they're saying it's going to, well, I don't know. I feel like there is also a Google graveyard for a reason. So it's like,
there's a Google graveyard. Yeah.
I want to see them bring it out. I would love to see it.
Yeah.
And then, and then we go from there and see how that rollout happens. But basically at CES 2022, Google's news was that, look, we want to play nice with everyone out there, except for people who don't want to play nice with us, I guess.
Apple, yeah.
AKA Apple. So basically everyone who shows up at CES, which is not Apple. So you can always go on to Engadget.com to read my article on this comprehensive set of updates that includes things like Phone Hub on Chromebooks. So if you have Chromebooks and Android phones, they're going to work a lot better together. You can keep your Chromebook unlocked if you have a Wear OS 3 watch nearby. Very similar stuff to Apple. And then, cars are also getting some updates. Android Auto is getting some updates. But yeah, what I'm saying is Google is aware that there is this seamless interplay between Apple devices that Apple users enjoy that some of us on the Windows and Android side of things can only look on and envy. And it seems to be bringing that over.
Are they working with Microsoft at all? I think like to do this, you have to get Microsoft on board.
It's actually surprisingly working with laptop makers like Acer and HP and Intel to bring FastPair to Windows PCs. So when you talked about that spec of allowing that iPhone phone connection with mobile connect, I feel like this thing might eventually make it into a spec with Intel.
That would make sense.
I don't know.
Yeah. And let's be clear, like the whole reason Apple can have this like wonderful ecosystem and like better pairing is because they built their own freaking wireless chip. So like their H1 chip is the magic key that lets you go from like, okay, AirPods to iPhone, AirPods to MacBook and go back and forth like almost seamlessly. It's going to need a lot of work and a lot of cooperation for PC folks to do that. Give it a shot, Intel. Sherlyn, anything you want to mention in terms of like phones, because there was like a little bit of phone news,
right? So speaking of Android, am I right? There were a couple of phones at this show, and CES is traditionally not a big phone show. Why? Because MWC is right around the corner, so not a lot of phones show up at CES. But Samsung did unveil the Galaxy S21 FE, or the Fan Edition. We've been waiting for this device for a while, and it's very funny that they announced it now when the S22 is presumably very close to launching. Usually last year it launched right after CES. This year we haven't really heard anything, but it should be by February, we think. So for the S21 FE, it's basically last year's S21 with a slightly bigger screen, same processor, same 120 hertz refresh rate, selling for $700. It's got like a triple camera system that's a little not as good as the S21s. And then it's got like, relatively bigger battery to match that bigger screen. It doesn't have S Pen support. There's It's an S21 FE. It's like what you'd expect. It's like last year's S20 FE, except for this year. And, you know, it doesn't have that same beautiful, I found beautiful design of the S21, where it was like a lavender body with like a rose gold contour cut housing for the camera module on the back. This series, the S21, is more like color matched and it's less shiny, so it to me feels less attractive, but it's still a decent phone for $700. The huge caveat is that the Pixel 6 starts at $600,
yeah,
and offers you a way better camera system and just really good software. So this phone just feels like it was announced at the wrong time, in my opinion. And then there's another phone, the OnePlus 10 Pro. This is a OnePlus 10 Pro. That's really all I'm going to say about it, because I am another so OnePlus. Annoyed. I am so annoyed at OnePlus for the way they chose to like structure their embargo around this. So on day one, you can tell people that there's a new phone. On day two, you can tell people some of the specs. On day three, you can tell people more of the specs. I'm like, no, I'm not playing your damn game. Yeah. I'm just going to tell people there's a new phone and y'all can go to Engadget.com to check the specs out. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for CES phones, y'all.
That's it for CES phones. Okay, well, I'm going to take a breather here because it feels like at some point in the middle of CES, we just got to like step back and look at the, I don't know, the terror in front of us. But let's move on to some weird gadgets. And okay. I feel like this is where CES really shines, right? So one of the weirdest things I think we've seen is Samsung's curved 55-inch Odyssey Arc monitor. This thing has like one of the most extreme curves I've ever seen in a monitor. Just like a bit, it's almost like a half moon. It's just like a big semicircle meant to like envelope you in your gaming while you're playing it. This is also a 55-inch it's a 55-inch screen, so having the curve kind of deeper in means it takes up less desk space. What's also interesting is that it can rotate into a 55-inch portrait-sized monitor. And just looking at photos of this, it's like, yeah, imagine if you took your TV and just turned it into portrait, and then it became like this crazy tall screen for zooming and also for playing games and stuff at the same time. It is wild. Samsung has been going really hard on like super wide and super intriguing monitors for a while. This one is 16:9, so it's like a normal widescreen. It's just the curve is wild. The screen itself is so wild. It's a quantum dot mini LED display, so it should be pretty bright and good looking too. But yeah, just kind of interesting about like what's going on there. Yeah.
It's for sure eye-catching, yeah.
And also something else I want to bring up, too, is Samsung showed off something called the Freestyle, which is a portable projector. It looks really cute. It looks like a cute little like Pixar character, really. Actually, it looks a lot like that Pixar lamp that is at the beginning of every one of their movies. But it's a portable projector. It weighs like 1.83 pounds, but the cool thing is it automatically focuses and automatically levels your image. And that is interesting because anybody who's played with projectors before, like getting the setup right is the most annoying part, like making sure everything is straight, making sure like everything looks correct. Samsung says this thing should be able to do that on its own. We have not tested it. I have not seen it in action, but it should be able to spit out like 30 to 100 inches of 1080p content. This is cool. I like projectors. I think you could do a lot with like projector technology. Say you have an office, like right now I'm in an office, I have a big blank wall next to me. Having a projector like this, I could just flip that on and have like a big screen of something happening rather than installing a TV to the wall, you know, and then I could take this sort of thing to the backyard and put in like an outdoor screen or something, or just hang a blanket from something outside and have like a decent, you know, a decent screen for watching movies with the kids outside. So it's cool. I like portable projectors. What do you think of this sucker?
I thought it was interesting, and I'm not the hugest projector girl. I wanted to get like a nice projector when I was thinking not a TV instead of, you know, for my home. But I mean, this is the sort of thing you'd have to see in person too, right? Like how bright does it get and all of that stuff. It's nice. Good for you, Samsung.
It's
nice.
It's good for you, Samsung. And hey, the thing, one other Samsung thing, which I didn't put a link in here for, but it is the thing we talked about last week. quantum dot OLED, Samsung announced their quantum dot display technology, which is going to be powering, I believe Sony's already using it for some TVs. So Sony has already announced quantum dot TVs. Go listen back to our last episode to like figure out what that is. But basically OLEDs with better color range and color brightness. It's interesting. It's interesting that Samsung, of all companies, the company that has kind of ignored big screen OLEDs, because they've been building small OLEDs for tablets and phones for a while, but they've ignored big screen OLED. Now they're going to have potentially the best OLED technology. That's really, really interesting to me. So, you know, something we'll be talking about.
I mean, speaking of Samsung's OLEDs, really quickly, I want to slide in here and just say Samsung also had a separate event under the Samsung Display branch where it showed off a bunch of different folding screens and like concept-y devices. So it had like a tri-fold, like a double fold concept OLED where, you know, it does that Z-shaped fold thing, and then also sliding screens, slidables. And, you know, they didn't really have the most concerted PR effort on this. So it's not like we got all of the information. Yeah. We have a lot of videos of it. It does look intriguing. But yeah, no, you can go to Engadget.com for like all the details on that.
Speaking of weird, wild things, Razer, of course, uses CES to show off some of its crazy concepts. And this year, they showed off a table, a gaming table. It is a table that basically houses all of your PC hardware. I believe you could just like plug in all your hardware there. So it's basically a giant PC case. But it's also a 65-inch OLED screen. It's supposed to be modular, so you can like, you know, swap things in and out. It's a glass tabletop surface. It's called Project Sophia. So I love it because my daughter's name is Sophia. Is really cool, but it also seems like one of those things that will never actually exist at any point. Something that may exist a little more is the crazy chair. So that is Project Enki. That's a $399 gaming chair that looks really comfortable, and it has built-in haptics. So they partnered with D-Box, that company that built the stupid like haptics chairs for theaters. So it has some of the D-Box technology. It'll support 2200 games. Of course, the chair will have RGB lighting. For $399, that's actually not too bad a decent, comfortable gaming chair, because a lot of them cost over $500. Some of the best ones cost over $1,000. So pretty decent pricing for a Razer. But I think you were intrigued by some other things, Shalyn.
One of my categories at CES is wearables, and Razer pushed out two of them. One is the Zephyr Pro mask. The Zephyr original was launched, I believe, last year. As sort of a follow through on a concept called Project Hazel. Eventually Razer did end up making this mask, cost $100 at the time, and it offered things like, well, first of all, it looks like the mask Bane wears, but with RGB lighting, because why not? But it also has dual fan active filtration system with N95 filters. The Pro model,
and it's transparent, so you can see somebody's face, which is
which, you know, Bane also wants his expressions read. I don't know. but the Pro model that was announced this CES adds voice amplification so that people can hear more clearly. I think that is really a useful thing to add. But it's also important to note that Razer isn't the only company to do this. LG did the same update to its smart mask that it also unveiled around CES time. So it looks like smart masks might be here and here to stay.
I wish if these are really smart masks, like give me like voice modulation. You know, like
let me
turn on like
villain.
Darth Vader mode on my mask, and then let's go all the way. Let's not go halfway. Let's go all the way. Yeah.
I look, the Zephyr Pro is supposed to amplify your voice by up to 60 decibels.
That's too loud.
I know, up to 1 meter away. It's basically like a megaphone on your mask. It's pretty cool.
Oh man, I'm thinking of there is a Venture Brothers character who is basically a villain who shouts everything because that's all he can do. Our producer Ben is also pointing out it's better for accessibility too, because you can do some lip reading. for a transparency thing, deaf people can do lip reading with it too. So that's kind of nice.
Well, I need to see how transparent this mask is and if anything.
There are photos. There are photos of like you see people's
mouths.
Yeah, the photos look.
The one that I'm seeing looks like it's a fully black mask, but
yeah,
no, for sure.
Because it's against a black background. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if we can see someone's mouth, for sure, if people do lip reading, that's great.
It looks pretty good. And like your mouth is like lighted up too. So it's the real thing is, I don't know, are we ready to walk out into society with these spaceship masks? I mean, the pandemic's still happening. It's still awful. Maybe around New York too, like you guys having stuff like this makes more sense. Down here, it is really hard. Like outside of Atlanta, I'm happy if somebody's wearing a mask, like any mask, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there.
Here, also,
here
apparently,
a photo in our live stream of a cool bro in a hoodie.
Apparently, like it's better to wear the like medical masks that are disposable anyway. Anyway. Gonna continue with Razer's news. The one last thing that was on my radar that they announced is the other wearable, the Razer X Fossil Gen 6 smartwatch. This is basically Fossil's Gen 6 smartwatch, but there's a Razer version now. And what would you expect from a Razer version if not
green and RGB? Yeah,
and
that's
RGB.
That's all I expect.
And you have those two things. There you go. It otherwise is a very bog standard Wear OS watch. It's not even Wear OS 3 yet, but it will get that update eventually.
I can't game on my Razer watch.
You can't
come
game on your Razer watch, bro. So there you go. No, the Razer showed up, right? It always does. So there you go.
So in addition to all of Razer's concepts, we saw some stuff from Dell. One thing I want to shout out is the Alienware Concept Nix, which is a I don't know. It's a Plex server for your games. And the idea is like you'll have a big ass server in your house that is powerful enough to push games to your TVs and all of your devices locally. So it's basically like local game streaming. And Sherlyn, you and I, we sat on a couch playing two different games. I played Cyberpunk on one half of the TV. You played Rocket League, I believe. And it was fine. Like it's a fine proof of concept, but you know, Dell is showing off these images of like, oh, somebody's full screening a game on one side and full screening another game on the other. And no, we were playing them in like little tiny like 16x9 boxes, you know.
Right,
so it was like a 60-inch TV, but the actual game window was really small because they didn't have the tech for splitting it up properly. I don't think people will be playing two games on a single TV. Maybe if they got the tech better, who knows.
It's more for like partners who are playing different games at the same time in the same household or something, or siblings or something, right?
Or like, siblings. It's how are you gonna make the audio work? Like, is it, you know, how are you gonna split the audio? I also don't know if like anybody needs this, right? If maybe 10 years ago Dell was like, here's a server that brings all your games to your house, sure, sounds good. Now I hit a button and I log on to my Xbox, you know, Game Pass streaming, which has pretty good, you know, pretty good latency, even though it's streaming from a server hundreds of miles away. So this concept seems a little late. I don't think anybody's going to want to buy this big hardware, because the beat of game streaming is that you have no hardware. You're just like, hey, I'm playing a game in the cloud. And also like PC gamers, like you can take a game. If you have a Steam gaming PC right now, you could hit a button and stream your game to another device, including an Apple TV, because Steam has built-in game streaming. So it's kind of like that, except worse, and I don't know if it's going to go anywhere. Kind of a cool concept. You saw a couple concepts, too, from Dell, Sherlyn. Like, did you want to shout any of those out?
We talked about this maybe in an earlier episode. The concept Perry was that wireless magnetic webcam that would stick to the monitor of compatible screens, so you can have like eye level gaze on your Zoom calls. I thought that was pretty cool. There's also Project or Concept Luna, which is about sustainability as well, where Dell's envisioning this repairable, almost modular laptop that when it breaks, you can just take out the part that's broken and then send that in for a replacement, as opposed to like just getting rid of your whole computer altogether. It's just much better for the environment if we were able to target and pinpoint what parts we could replace. But you know, it's those are just two concepts, so I don't know that Dell's following through on either of them just yet. We'll have to see. Like a lot of concepts,
we'll have to see. There's some weird stuff happening. I mean, Dell also showed off an eGPU as well. I'm like, bro, you have failed at eGPUs already, and you're making this one complicated, more expensive. I don't know. Maybe I did too much yelling at the Dell people, so I hope I hope they still like us. Sony, let's talk about some car stuff.
Oh,
real
yeah.
quick. Sony surprised us, and they were like, hey, remember that Vision electric car we showed off 2 years ago? I sat in that thing. It's really cool. Has some really cool software. But they were like, no, we're never going to build a car. Flash forward to this year, and Sony's like, here's the Vision S02 electric SUV. We are going to be selling this, or at least planning to sell it. They're actually going to start a whole new division called Sony Mobility. It'll be a whole new operating company starting at this spring, and they're going to start like playing around in the EV market. It may sound ridiculous, but guys, like those rumors of Apple building a car and just looking at what I'm seeing now of like these car companies and how Tesla came in and kind of blew everybody out of the water, there's a lot of room for a company like Sony or Apple to kind of come in and just be like, hey, okay, we will buy up like a little car maker or something, like implement that tech, bring their experience into something. And the Vision car I sat in was really cool. I'm really interested in car tech right now as well. So we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But I am intrigued by this because I think the way our car industry works right now is kind of broken. It deserves to be like it needs a kick in the pants. And speaking of cars, BMW showed off something really cool too. An e-ink based car covering that can change colors. It looks absolutely wild. There were some it's called the BMW iX Flow. There were videos of this floating around on Twitter, but basically like this car changes from like black to light gray in real time, almost white. Those are among the most popular car colors too, so that's kind of cool. The entire thing is basically a giant e-ink surface. So just like your Kindle, the way your Kindle turns pages, this thing changes colors. I'm super intrigued by this, but also I'm so wary of any like weird car tech that if you bump somebody, you have a little accident and it costs you $5,000 to fix. No thanks. That's not the way these things should work.
But
yeah.
Also, some of the hot takes I saw on Twitter were like, oh, can it display ads? Like, what is this thing going to do? Yeah, that's what's it meant to do? What's the purpose of this in addition to just like offering you a different aesthetic option when like you're feeling a different
watching
way,
it, you know? There are videos of it changing in real time. It's sort of like an animal, right? It's sort of like the way a chameleon changes colors, or like even
so
some
camouflage?
Fish. Yeah, a little bit. So imagine like, imagine it's like super bright out or something. I'm like, okay, I want a darker color to like not reflect as much light or something. Or if you want your car to change kind of shade throughout the day, maybe a lighter color at night so you're more reflective. That's kind of cool.
Or a shadier purpose, better. Which is to like, can they make cars, can it become dark at night and then like, you know, so white when you're driving on snow that it basically like, is this a villain
that's
car in the making?
Why are you doing this?
I know,
like,
you don't want to.
You're trying to cause accidents.
I know, you don't want to cause accidents, I agree, but you also can think of people using this in odd, different, bad ways. I don't know, I'm just
definitely,
like, all right, cool, but
I like display tech, but the if you look at any like dystopian science fiction thing, it is all about the way displays like kind of ruin society. You know, like it is the giant projections in Blade Runner. It's the like ads that read your eyeballs in Minority Report. So, hey, let's slow down a little. I just think it's kind of cool. So I want to throw that out there.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about the smaller weird things that happen at CES. There is a company called YBrush.
It's more like YWHY.
Actually, it's the letter Y dash brush. Uh-huh. It has offered, it's shown off at CES 2022. It's a concept for a second generation device. Now, the original YBrush was already this like, a Y-shaped toothbrush. It's a retainer.
It's a retainer with bristles.
With a motor handle like attached to it, right? And then you stick this thing in your mouth and you turn it on and it just brushes your teeth for you.
Again, all this stuff we've seen in dystopian science fiction. I think this was in Futurama where like maybe the first episode where they like rebuilt Fry and just like the robots like shoving something in your face to clean you. Right. It seems just like that.
Like, okay, a one-shot cool. cleaner. Yeah. So anyway, the second-gen version just has, like, stronger motors and, like, a beefier base for charging and that sort of stuff. But anyway, it's just wild.
Is the point, like, hands-free toothbrushing? So your hands will be free to keep, no. like, phoning and stuff?
It's, well, uh-huh. maybe, but I think it's more that, like, you know, like, how the conventional wisdom is you have to brush your teeth for, like, a certain amount of time day?
2 minutes.
This is, two minutes. This is 10 seconds. It'll get it all done. So I think it's convenience. Yes.
Maybe convenience, but it's also like how fast is that vibration? Like, is that a drill in your face?
It's like, good luck to your gums. R.I.P.
Good luck to your gums. Yeah. I know Dan.
Did you say Dan?
I was saying Dan Cooper at Engadget has been covering this because I think he covered the first one. So it's like he is the guy we will call on to do an in-person demo and we'll make a TikTok of it. Yeah.
R.I.P. his gums. But one thing that I would like to test for myself, a really quick shout out to the L'Oreal ColorSonic at-home hair color device. L'Oreal always does something really interesting at CES every year. And this year it did a color-changing device, hair color device at home. Normally at CES, I'd be able to check this out in person. I haven't yet, but I think it's a cool idea. Check out the Engadget.com article on this for the info.
Let's just round out some quick news from CES. Sony, out of nowhere, confirmed the PlayStation VR 2, the next version of its VR headset. It's going to be for the PlayStation 5. We don't have, like, we still don't have many details. We don't know when it's coming. We don't know pricing or anything, but they did give us some specs. It has a display resolution of 2000 by 2040 pixels per eye. It has a 110 degree field of view, 90 to 120 hertz frame rates, and supports 4K HDR. It's also going to have inside-out tracking, so that means you don't need to have like the little stupid Sony PlayStation camera, which the old one needed. Like, the old PlayStation VR needed so much hardware to set up. It was such a pain, but once you got it done, it was actually pretty impressive for what they got from a PlayStation 4. It's and there are going to be new controllers as well, as you can expect. So I'm excited. I'm also like wondering like what the hell is Microsoft doing, because the Xbox Series X and even a bit of a Series S could do some VR if they wanted. They're just like absolutely ignoring it. Sherlyn, do you want to talk about BlackBerry for a quick second?
RIP BlackBerry. RIP. This week a lot of BlackBerry OS devices basically died. January 4th, BBOS is dead for good. I think it started sort of with BBM even a little earlier, a little before
BBM
January
was like
died.
A couple of years ago. Yeah, like there were things that died. The App Store BBM died, but now like key services like phone calls, texting, data, like, emergency 911, all gone.
I will really quickly shout out, because I went to Singapore and a lot of people actually use these BlackBerry devices with the keyboards. They love the Key 2 and they're all hanging on to it. Some of my family members are like holding on to their BlackBerry Key 2s because they badly, and that runs Android. So those devices aren't actually dead, but the BBOS devices, RIP, my family members were very sad and I'm sorry.
Do you have any memories attached to BlackBerries? Because I really
I'm not BBOS. Yeah. I didn't do BBOS. Yeah. I was always a Nokia and a Symbian girl. There you have it.
There you have it. I mean, BlackBerry, by the time BlackBerries got big, like, they weren't cool. They were for, like, IT people.
Work
and people
only,
in big corporate jobs. Hey, that was a big deal. I do remember, like, one of my first CESs, I had dinner with Rim, and I also had dinner with Nokia. Like, dinner with two dying dinosaurs, basically. And they were just so oblivious to everything happening. It was kind of amazing. So thank you for the steak, Nokia. I'm sorry that everything I told you would happened. Yeah, it's a shame. Aww. It's a shame. RIP BlackBerry. RIP. It died so other devices could live. I think that's the best way to put it. And quick shout out to anybody who was listening to our past few episodes. I talked about my adventures in car buying. I did settle on something. I'll be getting the Chrysler Pacifica Hybrid minivan, the 2018 model. We've actually reviewed that at Engadget too. Robbie Baldwin reviewed that for us a couple of years ago. So check it out. It's really cool. I wanted a bit of electricity. I was really tempted to just be like, that Volvo XC90, I could just get that used and it would be so nice. It would be so luxe. like the most luxury my daughter and certainly I have ever seen in a car. But my better demons, my better angels, they're probably better demons at this point. My better angels are like, no. Just don't go for a gas guzzler. Let's wait a couple of years. So I'll be talking to you guys about this car, and it has a lot of cool features. Gets like 30 miles of EV, has a lot of cool safety tech. So we'll be talking about that.
Very cool.
Let's move on to our picks of the week. I think it's both of our picks.
Both of our pick this week.
Yeah.
We both saw recently The Matrix Resurrections. Hey.
Yay.
I will admit, so I saw this completely sober. But for this is a disclaimer I have to make.
Because, I mean, sure, that's the way to see this movie.
Yeah, but for the first like 20 minutes, I was so confused. I was like, wait, what is
it? Just throws you in there of just like, oh, we are just messing with your head. And hey, that's it's what I want. Give me more of that.
I was like, but it drew me in, right? Yeah, in a good way. Mm-hmm. But I also was, the first time I saw Tenet, I think people know I was not sober when I saw Tenet the first time. So I had like a similar...
Not as good a movie.
Definitely not. But yeah. I definitely had a similar situation of going, what the hell is going on for a long time? And then I understood. And then I was like, okay, they're not where I think they are. Or that this some sort of events have happened. You know what I mean? And so... Mm-hmm. But for me, as a Sense8 fan, I really enjoyed The Matrix Resurrections. But
Sense8 people. Yeah.
Basically an entire cell.
Except
Sense8.
Duna Bay. Like, Duna Bay was not there. But
hey, Duna was not there. Yeah. Kala was not there. But they did replace them with one Asian actress and one South Asian actress. I was like, all right, cool. There are two.
I mean, like a
Priyanka
world
Chopra,
star like Priyanka
Jonas.
Chopra. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I
yeah.
like her. Yeah.
She's not just an actress, but yeah. She's not the best actress, but I think she did perfectly fine.
She did
in
fine,
this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like it?
I freaking loved it. I was fully on board. So I saw this in a press screening on like in the middle of December. So I was like hyped up before everybody else. And then it slowly dawned on me that not everybody else was as hyped about this movie. I was like, whatever, guys. It is a really smart meditation on like what being a major franchise like this is. It's also like it's handling a lot of things, you know. Lana Wachowski, working on her own, talked about this being a way to deal with the grief of losing her parents and everything. I also think, I'm not gonna go too deep into spoilers here, but I think it is a good thing the way it brings back certain characters, because I would rather have those characters have a better ending than they had in The Matrix Revolutions. I'm a big Matrix fan, but I've talked about this before, and I think this is a smart, way to continue the story. I love we get more details in like what the humans are up to and how the humans and machines are kind of coexisting. And that always seemed like a big blind spot in the original series, because here's my hot take on The Matrix. The machines were right. The machines were right. If you go back and watch like the, was it the second revolution? If you watch some of the Animatrix stuff, basically humans sucked. Humans abused these machines. The machines were like, no, we're going to go start our own country. And then the machines' country started doing better than humans. So like they were so good at making things that it tanked the human economy. And all the humans were like, nah, bro, we're going to have to bomb you now. And they bombed the hell. Like that's when they literally waged war on this Middle Eastern robot country. And then everything happened. Then the world ended because humans didn't like being beaten by the machine. So anyway, I think Resurrections kind of deals with a lot of that stuff. I'm looking around at the world right now and seeing what happens when some countries don't like the way other countries do things. And sometimes it makes me think like, man, we are just doomed to repeat some of these things. I love this movie. I think Keanu Reeves is great. Carrie-Anne Moss is fantastic. She's always been the heart of this series. The action isn't as good. I think Lana Wachowski has talked about like she is approaching it differently now. Like before, they would like storyboard everything, like draw everything out, like individual frames, so they would look like comic book imagery. Right. Now it's more like they shoot action and she's shooting it like handheld, a little more like a little more free form to kind of get everything. It doesn't have the big set pieces of like Revolutions or even Reloaded. Like Reloaded, the highway chase is like one of the best things ever. But it has a lot of heart. I love the characters and I love the like Neo and Trinity relationship. Hey guys, they basically made a Before Sunset movie in The Matrix and I love it. I love that. So
yeah, I like the meta part of it. And yeah, no, it's a fun ride. I think it's just is a fun watch, especially if you like Sense8 and the Matrix franchise.
It's more Sense8 than the Matrix. And also, yeah, go watch Sense8. Sense8's pretty good.
So
pretty
good.
Some of the wildest TV you'll ever see. But yeah, that is our Matrix talk. And also, yeah, go check out my full review over at the Filmcast podcast. So yeah, you can hear me talk more about that. And spoilers, it ended up being my number one movie of 2021. So it beat out a lot of things. It beat out The Green Knight, a movie I loved as well. Damn. So, you know, I'm just fully down with The Matrix Resurrections. Send me your hate mail or whatever. Go read our reviews. I wrote a review on Engadget as well, so you could go check that out. I think you can take us out, sure.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you have recommendations for very cute personal support robots, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. And a heads up, we're taking a break next week after CES, so there will be no episode from us or live stream. Come back the week after.
We'll be back.